It's The Bill Murphy Show, a daily one-on-one 30-minute interview featuring people from all walks of life. Available daily as a podcast at BillMurphyShow.com. And now, here's your host, Bill Murphy.
Yes, it is. Welcome to the first edition of The Bill Murphy Show, located on BillMurphyShow.com, a daily podcast where I'm going to be bringing you different guests every single day. High profile, low profile, no profile, regular everyday people, because in my opinion, everyone is interesting. And we are starting off this show's run with a bang, a big surprise this morning. It's probably not a big surprise by now. I've let the cat out of the bag a few times. But I wonder if the intro for this guest that I have this morning is going to fit in the 30 minutes. Ladies and gentlemen, it's one of South Florida's legendary radio voices, morning show host, FM rock radio programmer, rock and roll DJ, music and variety show producer, bass player, sound audio engineer, movie trivia expert, television critic, both professionally and in his spare time, radio comedy service creator and writer, the host of Funny in the Morning, heard mornings on Raw Dog on Sirius XM. He's not to be confused with the guy from Wonderama. Ladies and gentlemen, Sonny Fox, thank you for joining me, buddy. It's a big day, and I really wanted you to be a part of it.
Really? I really appreciate you qualifying that I'm not the guy from Wonderama. I think he's 4 years older than I.
I was always confused about that. I used to mention, oh, yeah, I work with Sonny Fox. Oh, the guy from Wonderama? But didn't, I think that was from a Wonderama before my time, because I only remember Bob McAllister. So who are they actually talking about?
Well, it's typical of people on the East Coast. I got that name out in Los Angeles in 1973, and I didn't know about this guy at all. I came back east to run a station in Philadelphia, WYSP, and all the people, oh, you're the guy from Wonderama? And everybody on the East Coast, especially in New York, expect everyone in the world to know what they were listening to when they grew up, because it's New York.
Right.
You know, but the truth of the matter is, New York, to anybody else, is really no different than Cleveland or anything else if you didn't live there. You know, but I found out about this guy, and he tried to sue me once, but he was out of work at the time, and I was on KHJ in Los Angeles on the air, so they told him to go away.
I thought I knew everything about your career because we worked together so many years ago, but I did not know there was an L.A. connection. When were you in L.A.? Was that the very beginning of the career?
I'll make this a real short version. I started out in radio in Grand Rapids, Michigan, where I was born, and because of good fortune, and I like to think some talent, I went from Grand Rapids to Detroit to Chum in Toronto.
Right.
To San Diego at KCBQ during its heyday. That was a lot of fun. And then they hired me to go to Los Angeles at KSJ, number one station in L.A. Mm. And I was there for a while, and then I joined up with Lee Abrams, who was a programmer. And we started Album Rock Radio in 1973 back east. And so when I came back from Los Angeles back east for the first time, I found out about this the guy who used to play cartoons.
I only grew up in the Bob McAllister era, so I was like, I have no idea who you're talking about. That must be way before my time. But anyway, I didn't know about L.A. I knew about San Diego. Of course, I knew about Grand Rapids being your roots. And then you were part of radio when it became the most fun version that radio ever was. And fortunately, I got to work with you during part of that. There was a part of your career where you were at WYSP in Philadelphia and then moved to a radio station located in a trailer park in Davie, Florida. I want to know what that day was like when you got the call from Mr. Tenaglia to come down to Florida and do the She thing.
Well, first of all, let's back up a second. When I was in Los Angeles, I was doing the swan song of AM radio. Don Steele and Robert W. Morgan was on the morning. It was the last day of the golden age of AM radio out there. And I was living in Los Angeles in 1973. You have to understand, you are subject to all kinds of overindulgence.
Okay. I think I know what you're talking about. Yeah.
And I had a very very positive attitude and a very opinionated attitude. And I was doing this opinion column in a West Coast magazine, and the people in Los Angeles said, you shouldn't be doing that and be on the air, too. You're giving away all our secrets. Mm. I said, well, not really. I said, if they want to turn on the radio, they can hear all your secrets.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
So I quit, and I like an asshole, and I was out there out of work. I just quit the number one station in the country, no money, and a fellow named Lee Abrams had been reading my column because it was uncensored.
Right.
And called me and said, why don't you meet me in Cleveland, Ohio? And I said, okay. So I got on my Volkswagen bus. No, I'm not kidding. And I drove to Cleveland, Ohio. And he said, I'm going to do a thing on FM radio. And
okay.
I said, what? And he goes, it's called Album Rock, and we're going to play the cuts from albums like they do now on those underground FM stations, because most FM stations were only strictly for dentist offices,
right,
and stuff.
Right.
You couldn't even get it in your car without an adapter. And he goes, no, we're going to play Album Rock. We're going to get rid of all the hippies, the underground hippies that are on the air, and we're going to play all the tracks in those albums that are great that AM radio won't play because they're not singles.
Now, was there part of you that thought this can't work because we won't be playing hits? You know?
Of course. Absolutely. I was from that school that, you know, without hits you won't do anything. But Lee Abrams was so absolutely correct that the great, great music was not being played on AM radio at all. The crap was being played on AM radio. But he was the guy that today is accused of helping ruin Album Rock. He was the guy that said, we're going to make playlists,
right,
of the five or six cuts on the Allman Brothers or Led Zeppelin that are great, and we're going to play them in rotation. So when you turn on the radio, he says, here's the deal. Jump in your car, drive around town, push a button for your station, and push the other stations. Who wins?
Right.
And we won every single time.
Yeah, you did.
And incredible success. And his toughest job at that time was convincing radio station general managers that this was even a valid idea. And but, of course, we ended up with the stations that had no audience whatsoever because they were desperate. And we went to the first station was in New Orleans at WRNO. We went from a 0.3 to a 4.7 in one book. And then he said, would you like to go to Washington, D.C.? Howard Stern's the morning guy there, and we want to do this in Washington. And I said, okay, you want to be the program director. And I said, okay, and I missed the plane.
Oh, and, wow.
And I said, well, there goes that career. And Lee Abrams, the kind of guy he is, he called me back 2 months later and said, how'd you like to run Philadelphia?
And then you made sure you didn't miss that flight. That's for sure.
That's right. And that's where you probably first heard of me. And that was also a special deal. I'll try to make this shorter. Because when I went there as a program director, Lee and I sat down with a guy named Bob Leonard,
mm-hmm,
and said, we're going to do a morning show that is personality, like the Today Show.
Right.
Not just music, but personality. And Bob did the show from the studios, and I convinced the powers that be that I would be much more natural and much more casual if I did the show from my house.
Yep.
And so they put in the equipment, and Fox and Leonard were born, and Lee reminded me years later, it was the first two-man morning show on FM radio.
And when you look back in retrospect, a pretty ballsy request on your part to hey, you know, pipe this thing in from my house. I don't feel like going into the station.
Well, I went into the station around noon, but...
oh, good for you.
But the thing about that is all the people, because Philadelphia is a great concert town, and David Bowie and Elton John and
right,
the Grateful Dead, everybody who came to town to do interviews, I also convinced them, and it didn't take too much convincing,
right,
that they'd much rather come out to my apartment and record the interviews than walk into that neon-lit office and have,
sure,
the secretaries all over them.
Right, much fewer photo ops going on in your living room than at the station.
Right.
So, yeah.
So as a result, I was very, very fortunate to have some wonderful, wonderful memories in my apartment. And my favorite story, if I could tell you quick, was Jerry Garcia came by And
can you?
He came by and he was had a little entourage with him of record company people who immediately attacked my kitchen phone to start phoning around the country telling stations who was adding what. And Jerry got upset. He goes, "Will you fuckers just go out and sit in the limousine?"
Oh man!
And so he went out in the limo and we started talking. And he said, "Do you have a cleaner?" Because he has brought some weed with him. And my little Mary gin. Remember those things you put the weed in and turn it?
I have no idea what you're talking about. Sure, yeah, I remember those things.
Yeah, well, mine was broken. So I said, "Sorry." And Jerry says, "No problem. Where's your bedroom?" And I said, "Over there." So he ran into my bedroom, pulled out my bottom drawer, which contained my underwear.
Right.
And dumped the underwear on the floor and dumped this giant bag of weed in my drawer. And took an album and started cleaning it, and like canting the drawer sideways.
Sure.
To make a long story short, he rolled a big joint, came out, did an interview, and I'll never forget.
And I'm sure it went just fine. Very laid back.
Oh, yeah, it was a classic conversation.
Well, I do want to segue into the Fort Lauderdale trip, that segment of your career, which became legendary down here. Sonny, it's been so long since you've been on the air down here, and people still remember you. Not only do they remember that, but they, of course, they remember the legendary WSHE. Let's talk about that station for a bit, and how pivotal and how, you know, big was that segment in your career?
Well, I'll tell you, I think that's the reason I led all this big, long story up to that point, because you asked me about that, as if I had come down there triumphantly. It was quite the opposite. I was out in Los Angeles at the Billboard convention, hanging out with the Aykroyd and Belushi, the Blues Brothers, and getting wasted and having a good time, and decided that I was so important, I didn't need to come back to the station right away. I'll spend an extra week out there.
Right.
And they fired me.
Wow.
And they said, "You're fired." And so there I was with not much money, and spending too much money on recreational drugs. And I said, "I got to get my shit together." And so I decided at that point that I didn't want to deal with management anymore. I didn't want to be a program director. I didn't want to be the boss. I wanted to be a personality like Bob and I were doing in the mornings.
Right.
And so John Tenaglia, who owned WSHE, heard that I was no longer on the air, called me up, and I said to myself, "You know, the best thing I can do is go down there, be a nobody, take $500 a week salary, and lay on the beach and dry up and straighten up." And I went down there just to do that. That's all I wanted to do.
Mm.
And the rest is history. I teamed up with Skip Herman. I brought the same attitude, the two-man morning show down there. And in fact, I have been so used to doing the show from my house, and I like the fact that when two people aren't in the same room, you get a different show.
Right.
Because when you're in the same room, you don't realize how much body language you use when you talk to somebody.
That's true, and it keeps you on your toes a little bit more. You're not just looking out of the corner of your eye at a facial expression. You're getting a feel for the show through the sound of the show more than just visual,
You hear their voice like the audience does.
Right.
And consequently, so I had Skip do the news from down the hall. And I did the show from the control room. And we were very fortunate. It was very successful. And I brought all the knowledge of the album cut rotation, the format with me, and she did extremely well. It was a lot of fun.
Between you guys in a little office was an intern getting all the traffic reports and handing them off to you guys. And that was the start of my career. So that was...
That's right. We called you Young Bill because you were very young compared to us. And there was another guy there called Ron Hersey.
Oh, yeah. Probably a lot of people don't know this, but at the time, Ron was working at the sister station called WSRF and was down the hall playing, I don't know if he was doing country music or...
Right.
Yeah. And so I used to visit with him between segments and joke around with Ron. And then it all just melded into one, you know, happy family that became legendary. And I was honored to be a part of it. And it was very cool. It's amazing how timing works out in life, you know?
Well, it is. I've been extremely fortunate as far as timing goes. At that time, Ron was down the hall, like I said. And the classic story was, Ron was on the air one morning doing the mornings at the country station, and the signal there at the AM station, was what it was, the sister station, went about as far as the trailer park. And he was on the air, and he had tickets to a local country club for a pretty decent band. I forget who it was. And he went on the air and went, okay, caller number three gets for free tickets. And you could literally walk to the station, get the tickets, and walk to the concert. And nobody called. And Ron went down the hall. He says, you got to get me the hell out of here. And so I said, well, I'll tell you what. Yeah, he does Sly Stallone. And he did all these voice impersonations around the water cooler. And I started asking him to do phone calls with me on the show. And one thing led to another. And when Y100 called and said, do you want to come over here? And everybody, of course, all the hippies said, well, Sonny, how can you sell out and go right to the top 40? Well, those hippies didn't realize that I was getting a little tired of playing Led Zeppelin for 7 years. And at that time, MTV was just hitting.
Sure.
And I knew that MTV was going to blend top 40 in albums.
Absolutely. I was just going to say that Y100 was the... That era was the top 40 stations were playing the coolest rock songs because the coolest rock songs had the best videos on MTV. So,
oh, absolutely. So when I went over there, they said, okay, and they were negotiating. And I had to make a decision, and the decision was to take Ron with me and not Skip. And people often ask me why, and I'll be very honest with you. Skip's a great guy. He's a talented fellow. But... I have always surrounded myself with people, including you, who really love what they do.
Right.
They don't complain about it. They don't have excuses when something doesn't work. They don't look at it as a job. They look at it as an opportunity.
Yeah.
Something. I mean, what the hell better way to wake up every morning, laughing your ass off, screwing around, doing phony phone calls on the phone, and being in charge. As long as you got great ratings,
yeah,
they don't tell you what to do.
No, that's true. I was never that fond of the waking up at 4:15 part, but aside from that, the rest of that list I agree with completely. But
well, I've always said after that point down there that the only reason to stay up past 9 p.m. is bad TV and drugs.
Right.
So I just went to bed early.
No, that's
but,
true.
So Ron came along over Y100, and that started another golden era. And Ron Hersey, I got to tell you, I'm so very grateful and thankful I met him, because that was the best 20 years of my life. We had such a lot of fun. It was just one laugh. Tears running down our face. It was ridiculous. It was so much fun. And like I said, we were fortunate that management did not come in and call us on the hotline. They knew better than that.
Right.
And to tell us what was funny, as long as you're number one, they leave you alone. And it was a wonderful time.
And again, it's strange how things work out. You deciding to continue your career with Ron instead of Skip led to Skip hooking up with Jim McBean, and in all fairness to those guys, starting another legendary era down here that people fondly remember. Although WGTR was very short-lived, those guys got a real big following very quickly.
Absolutely. There's always a huge audience for rock and roll. In fact, Lee Abrams, who started me off and who created the format I brought to She, was responsible for GTR. That was the first
all compact disc station. Rock and roll station. Right. I'll never forget.
And did you ever tell anybody what the GTR stood for?
Well, it was the abbreviation for guitar. I would be on a PA board when the engineer would write the instruments down, and usually they would write GTR. So.
Right, exactly. That's the kind of guy Lee Abrams is. He's my inspiration, and he's one of those fellows that if you don't... In fact, let me end that story about when he called me in 73 on the phone. He goes, oh, Sonny, come on, let's get together. FM's where it's at. I went, oh, yeah, really? And 30 years later, 2003, approximately 30 years later, he called me down in Florida and said, oh, Sonny, it's Waze, yeah. Come to Washington. FM's history, it's XM now.
Whatever you say, Mr. Abrams. It worked out perfectly last time.
You ever have one of those friends where you don't talk to him for 3 years, and he calls, and it's if you just spoke to him yesterday?
Oh, I know.
It makes no difference. You know, he's just a wonderful guy. For those people who are interested, Lee, when XM and Sirius merged, he decided to split because it was sort of diluting everything. And he went over. He's now in charge of creativity at the Tribune. He runs all their TV stations, the newspaper, and the Cubs, and anything else.
Right, but he basically got it off the ground, and this is an excellent time for us to segue into what you're doing now. Now you are host of Funny in the Morning, and I believe still in charge of most of the programming for those comedy stations on Sirius XM, correct?
Well, let's put it this way. When I went up there in 2001, I believe it was,
mm-hmm.
it, I went up there to work at the album rock station called Deep Tracks.
Yes. And we still hear your voice between tracks on Deep Tracks, don't we?
Oh, yeah, no, that's Top Tracks. That's the one, that's the version of the original album rock station.
Okay.
But I went up there briefly to do that because Lee asked me to, and I listened to the Comedy Channel, and I said, boy, because I used to produce a show in the 70s called The Comedy Hour. It was on about 100 markets. And it was basically stand-up comedians back then, like George Carlin and Robert Klein, with the radio dial dialing in between the bits.
Right.
And it was syndicated in about 100 cities, and I really loved that. I loved stand-up. I went up there, and there was Comedy Channel being run by this guy, and I felt, well, I'm not going to get that job because, you know, it's already there. And lo and behold, remember I said I was very lucky in my career?
You and me both, Sonny. You and me both.
I suddenly heard, I won't say what his name was, but suddenly one morning, it was all a buzz. The fellow had been arrested for having sex with 14-year-old boys.
Yikes.
And so they said, would you like to run the channel? Now, let me explain something. After being what you might call a personality,
right,
and a, you know, a golden goose or whatever, and getting my way and having, like I said, nothing but laughs, I went from that to running the comedy channels on XM, the Family Channel and the Uncensored Channel, for 7 years. And that was probably the most work I've ever done.
I believe it.
Because all the voice tracks were pre-recorded. Mm-hmm. I spent my day listening to comedy, recording comics in clubs, getting the logs made, making sure that it was the best possible sounding channel I could. And that was a lot of work. So, but I loved it because I've interviewed every comedian that's probably breathing. We've recorded many all over the country in clubs. We've recorded comics that don't have their own CDs and helped them along. Things that were originally radio specials turned into CDs, like Mitch Fatel's Super Retardo and Gaffigan and Rich Lewis Black. It's just wonderful. But it was a lot of work. At that point, I was saying to Janet, who I've been with forever, I said, you know, this isn't as much fun as it was. And I'm getting old enough now, I can retire, I guess, if I want to do it early. And then Sirius and XM went to merge, and they said, we're going to have Sirius run the channels. And I said, well, then I'm out of here. Because, make a long story short, I'm a little more meticulous in the way they run things.
I see.
And I was going to leave. And I got this call from Mel Karmazan's lieutenant and said, let's sit down and talk. And to make a long story short, he goes, why don't you stay and just do mornings like you want to and do a live show? And I said, a live show? I said, my whole philosophy has been not to interrupt the comedians with a bunch of bullshit.
Right.
It's been just be informational, say who's coming up, what specials are on tonight, do interview specials. He goes, no, think about it. He goes, you're one of the best morning guys Mel's ever heard, and which was very flattering. And he goes, they've never done a show, a morning show, with phone calls and screwing around, but playing stand-up instead of music. And I said, you know, this guy's got, he's right, you know.
Well, there you can draw parallels between the 3 or 4 or 5 minute comedy segments that these guys are doing and records. I mean, it works right. Perfectly with listeners' attention spans as well, you know.
Exactly. And so I thought he was nuts. I went home and thought about it, and the phrase "never been done before" always rings a bell in my head. So I went back there. I said, "Well, if we're going to do this, we're going to make it. You know, we're back to like the old days of being negotiating and being the big talent, blah blah blah." And so I said, "Okay, this is a 3 year or whatever contract." I said, "X amount of money." Okay. I go, "Said I want to do it for my house." Okay, I said, "I want to live anywhere in the country. I want to live Hawaii, Europe." Anywhere I want to live. Okay. So here we are. We started the show, and it has been one. I mean, I've never done a show on radio where, you know, I don't necessarily want to say fuck or bad words.
That's right.
That's not what censorship is about. It's subject matter.
Yep.
And you could talk about gay, retarded midgets, but the nice thing is, anybody on the phone, and people are pretty illiterate usually, the phone callers, they're hilarious. And the things that they talk about and the things that they say, we can now air.
Yep.
And comedians have a carte blanche to whatever they want to talk about. So once again, full circle, we're back doing something that's unbelievably satisfying and so much fun.
Full circle, really. Including the part where you get to do the show from your house, too, which is fantastic.
And well, listen to this. I got. Here's the end of the story. We do the show on what they call ISDN lines, which break digital signals over a regular phone line, so it sounds like we're in the studio, even though we're at the house up in New York. Well, as of 6 months ago, they just developed equipment. You can broadcast ISDN full quality from the studio over G3 phone system.
Well, there you go.
So we're thinking about doing the show from our RV all over the country next year.
When you first told me about it, I immediately thought of Woody Harrelson's character in 2012, and I'll find you at Yellowstone Park.
Yeah, but if there's a big wall of flame coming at me, I'm going to be going the other way.
You won't continue to talk to Mitch Fatale at that point,
no,
right?
No, not at all.
We left out in this illustrious career of yours, and of course I didn't want to make this about me. We were talking about your career and the decades that it spans, but we had a period of time in there where we worked together in Dallas, Texas, and You made a dream of mine come true, and that was actually going to Texas and working in Dallas. I remember when you said to me, "Hey, I'm going to do a morning show in Dallas." I was wondering, do you want to come along with me? Yes. I don't even think I let you finish that sentence. I was all over it. But we had a good time there. Now, just looking back to 1973, 1978, 1982 at She, and comparing times to now, you and I were always technology buffs, and we were always up on what was the coolest new thing. I think we listened to a compact disc together for the first time. I think we experienced that. But I mean, you really, if I tried to do what I'm doing now independently out of my own house in 1980, I mean, you can imagine the size of the antenna that would be strapped to the size of my house, at the side of my house, and I'd get a radius of maybe 150 feet. On such a thing. And now I can go worldwide with just acquiring a website, doing a little self-promotion. The social networking obviously is what it is. I mean, it is just amazing what we have been through. Have we lived through the greatest technology era of the planet? I mean, it seems that way.
I think so. And I'm even more flabbergasted because when I started out, we were using turntables.
Right.
I remember we went to turntables, and the big thing was, everything's on cartridges.
Right.
And then it was, it's CDs. And now CDs blow because they skip. So, it's all digital. It's all... but you know something on top of that, and by the way, the time in Dallas, the reason I asked you to come along was for the same reason I mentioned earlier. You have this effervescence about you. You really enjoy, you have a great smile, you enjoy what you're doing. I don't think, I know 12 people, and of course I don't socialize a lot, but you're one of 12 people I know that if I ask you a question, you will not lie to me. And you know, but it's not because it's hard to tell the truth.
Right.
It's really harder to lie.
No, it's difficult. Yeah, I'm not a good liar. I admit that. That's for sure.
And another thing is, contacting other people, for those people listening, who you can call on the phone and go, I'm in Kansas City, and I broke my leg, and my car went over a cliff, and I got enough money to get home. Could you come get me? How many people would come get you? I know not a lot.
There's less than a half a dozen, I think.
So when you came along, and explain to people what happened when I left, because I got fired after a while.
That was a rough time, but we... the other thing that you can add to this list of reasons why you like me, Sonny, is that I think one of the things is that I was able to make you laugh. And there was a very, very... satisfying thing about that. This here is the master of jokes, the funny guy in the morning who makes the whole city laugh, and then I could crack a joke and crack you up and get you to, you know, kind of fumble over the end of a record while we were talking. Unfortunately, I was making you laugh during the breaks while the music was playing. But my goal was to try to get you cracking up when it was time to come in at the end of the record, and then you're falling apart and everybody's wondering what just happened behind the scenes, which was a lot of fun.
That's the whole premise that we're doing right now every morning. And I don't know how many million people are listening, but the comedy channels have a lot of listeners. I mean, comedy is extremely popular for many reasons. But our only goal now with my producer, Steve, who's a 25-year-old guy up in New York, so his whole his whole priorities every day is eating and masturbating. And I'm the old guy, you know. Right. And then Janet, my better half, is the woman in the bunch who gives a balance. And but the purpose, the reason I brought it up, the purpose is still the same.
Right.
We have to laugh and enjoy ourselves, because when people listen on the radio, they don't really necessarily want to hear us say funny things. They want to hear someone having a great time.
Right.
And when they hear that, they're participating in the third person. By the way, speaking of stand-up, Tommy Tiernan, who's very, very big over in Ireland, he just got his own Comedy Central special about 6 months ago. He's huge over there, and he finally came to America. And during an interview, we were talking about comedy and why it's popular. It was always one of the top five of the 300 channels on XM, because comedy contains laughter, it contains social comment, it contains things that you won't be heard discussed anywhere, not on any news channel,
right,
any talk station. It contains subject matters you cannot cover if it weren't in a form of comedy, and people just gravitate. It has all the finer parts of talk radio, phone-in radio, comedy radio, current events, news radio. And he said over in England and Europe in general, that although music still draws big crowds at stadiums, the clubs, stand-up draws far more people than music.
Mm.
Because, and we're discussing the fact that in my day, music had a social message.
Sure.
Whether it be Dylan or Yes or esoteric messages or social commentary, the lyrics are very important. And now music is not that at all. Comedy is.
Well,
as
great as that is for comedy, and then this could be a subject for an entire other show for the two of us, but that also says a lot about the state of music at this time and why
right.
people listen to music and what is going on musically. I mean, we could go on and on for hours, obviously, about the music industry and what's happening there, but that's not what this interview's all about. We'll save that for the next show, Sonny.
Okay.
Well, just to touch on what I, because I'm laughing to myself listening to you. When we go back to Dallas, I remember being in that beautiful building they had us in, and we were overlooking the city, and the laughing that we would do when we were recording, like, let's say a parody song or a celebrity phone call. I guess I used to do Stevie Nicks in a deep voice and Andrew Dice Clay. But when we were trying to record those and messing up, that's where most of the laughter happened. And looking back, I think the audience would have enjoyed that even more than the actual product we put on the air, you know?
Oh, yeah. Well, one of the highlights, when I was talking about having so much fun with Ron Hersey back in the South and with you guys in Dallas, was that we used to say, we see some of the paper, like Mr. T was arrested or something, and, oh, quick, run in the other room and call me. I had no idea what we were going to do. Call me. And then, and our sound effects, we had libraries of sound effects available to us, but my favorite sound effects were the coffee can.
Of course.
With a bunch of junk in it, you know, you shake like there's a garbage can falling downstairs, or hold it up and talk into it and be Darth Vader.
Right.
And it's, you know, and the hokier the better.
Oh, yeah.
You know, who could forget when Ron first taught me into doing my first voice? I was too shy. I could not do a voice. He did all the voices.
Oh, this was the Ronald Reagan story, right?
Ronald Reagan. And he goes, Ronald, I happen to have a nasally voice, so I said, how's this? Well, hello. And he goes, yeah, it sounds just like it. But I still didn't have enough balls to do it, so I phoned him, and I got a cellophane off of a cigarette pack, and I crinkled it into the phone to cause static.
Sure.
To further cover up my voice until I got used to it. And we used to use crap like that all the time, and I think the audience knew damn well what was going on. And you talk about the technical imperfections that make people laugh. When Ron would be Elvis, he'd run in, the door would go, and open up, and he'd run in and do Elvis, stuff his face full of donuts, and he goes, oh, well, I'll see you later. And when he went to leave, I would shut the door before he got out, the sentence done.
Oh, right.
To see if he would stop talking on time.
And then you'd hear him coming through the microphone at that point instead of the phone. Oh, that's great stuff. That's
right, about the other side of the door.
Right. Fantastic stuff. Now, apparently, this show is going over. This is supposed to be a 30-minute show, but we are over just a little bit because this is just getting very nostalgic. Sonny Fox is with us. Oh, I went that long without reminding the listeners who we were talking to. But
By the way, let me ask you a question. If you're on a podcast, it's on your web site, right?
Right.
And it's going to run, and when it's over, they can listen to it over and over again if they want to?
Sure.
If you're the boss, it's your website, your show, who gives a shit if it's more than 30 minutes long?
You're absolutely right. God damn it. So as long as you have time, we're moving on.
Okay.
Now, after 92, when you left, okay, no, in 90, actually, to fill people in on the rest of that, your run at Y95 was what we were talking about, KHYI in Dallas. Your run there was short for... of a couple of different reasons that we don't need to get into now, but I guess clash with the ownership would be a good way of capitalizing that. I mean, everybody's familiar with that, no matter what industry they work in. So,
well, they made a mistake when they hired me. They figured they did, and I can understand that. I remember one of the first bits we did. We got there was the old Jewish condo commando from because we've been in Miami for 20 years, and these are a bunch of rednecks.
Right.
So we certainly made our mistakes.
Rednecks.
Well,
if you don't mind saying no.
No.
Dallas wasn't really as much redneck town as, you know, it wasn't Amarillo, Texas, or, you know, anything.
But I mean, I remember one of the first things I did when I went on the air, there was a city called White City.
Right.
Outside of Dallas. I said, I bet there's no black people, or I bet there's all white people, too.
Uh-oh.
And unfortunately, no. It is all white people.
Yeah, no, I think of White Rock Lake, I think, is what you're talking about. Yeah. Oh, wow. And you don't joke around with Texans about their chicken fried steak, we noticed right off the bat. I mean, that was a dead giveaway that we had. We said we hadn't heard about chicken fried steak, and they're like, who are these guys? You know, how dare they put them on the radio here?
Put it this way, when I left Y100 and when I left Dallas, there were conflicts,
right,
which, like I said, are too boring to discuss. But we sued both of those companies, and they're huge conglomerates, and we won both times.
Oh, so good for you.
Let's just leave it at that.
And just one final note on that, these people ended up, by losing their lawsuits, they got what was owed to you anyway. That's what they get for signing the contracts that they did at the time, and it's a good thing that they were forced to follow through with those.
Yeah, well, everybody that hires you has the option to say, well, I changed my mind.
Right.
But when they, because, you know, like you said, you described our experience there. Yours and mine, it was a lot of fun. We had a ball. I'm sure the people listening had a ball. But it wasn't what they wanted. The guy that hired us was fired 3 months after we got there, so they wanted to clean up the mess.
Right.
And but you, when you want to decide that you've made a mistake, you don't try to do it by not paying the people.
No, exactly right.
You say, oh, well, write that off, and
right.
Yeah. But anyway, that's the part of the radio business that blows. But on the other hand, that's not what we do. We're the people on the air.
The fun far outweighs it. And then, so I was able to stay there. You returned to Florida and continued your career. Went to Magic 102.7 and made that station take off bigger than it ever did. And then you and Ron, and we could go on and on for hours about that. I was able to stay in Dallas and was part of an innovative station called KDGE The Edge, one of the first alternative stations ever that was playing the cool new wave rock. I mean, talk about musically, I really enjoyed myself there. And I partnered with John Ford, who was also an old She veteran. And I'm going to have John on next week on this show, on the Bill Murphy Show, and reminisce about that stuff. So I'm really looking forward to that as well. So
well, you started your hockey calling career in Dallas too.
Well, yeah, I actually went to work for the sports station. Well, that's a good story that we don't need to get into because Sonny Fox is the guest today, not me. But I did, with my luck, when you could put this one into the category of Murphy's Law. As soon as I was hired at KTCK, the Ticket in Dallas, and got the job of covering the Dallas Stars, who were new to the NHL, and I was the only hockey guy at the station. And then the NHL goes on in their lockout, and there was no hockey for almost that whole season, and I was out of work. And that forced me to come back to Florida and go back to work at She. So, you know, things always happen for a reason. And again, a timing is so much of everything, and especially in the radio and entertainment industries. And
well, let me tell you about timing for a second. I mentioned earlier that I was very grateful and fortunate that the way technology has evolved in my career, the way I met some wonderful people and got opportunities. But, you know, again, though, you shouldn't discount the fact that, you know, it does take some talent. But
right.
My fortune is great, but my partner Janet and I were talking about, unfortunately, the places we go, seemed to suffer. I remember when, when we went to Florida the first time from Philadelphia in 1980 was just when Cuba released all the criminals from jail.
There you go, right.
And then so, all right, you know, sorry about that. You know, then we went to Dallas.
And Jimmy Johnson went to take over the Cowboys. Remember? That was when we went to Dallas the same week he went there.
Right, and then when we came back in 1990 to do the oldie station, we went on the very first day Hurricane Andrew struck.
Oh, wow.
And then when we went up to Washington from South Florida to say, oh, hey, we're going to have winters again. We can have a Christmas tree and stuff after 21 years. They recorded the worst winter in the history of weather keeping in Washington. And then we decided to come down here to Pensacola. Of all the places we could have lived to do the show, like I said, we could pick where we want to live. The beaches here are absolutely the most gorgeous in the world. And we moved down here, and there's an oil spill.
Yeah.
So I think we're sort of a jinx.
Or there's just been some sort of destiny put upon you to just be in the center of everything, no matter where you go. Something along those lines. We can get into the oil spill, I guess, briefly now. One of my goals with this show was to not be as topical or current as a normal show, because I want to make sure that my archives remain relevant for a period of time. But I'm sure this oil spill is going to be relevant for a while, and it looks like it's drifting a little west, but every time I see another aerial shot or another report, it just looks like it's consuming the Gulf. We are in for a big giant headache in this country because of this oil spill.
Yeah, we are. And again, I don't want to bring everybody down because it's been fun. But I subscribe to the Washington Post, the online version, because it's a great paper. It spoiled me when I lived there,
right.
And everything else blows. And one of the, it just, as far as the government goes, complete failure. They didn't check the safety conditions, didn't check the equipment. They didn't perform any ecological studies, because they, if you didn't know it, they get millions of dollars for closing the deal at a certain deadline, and they get $50 to $100 million for licensing Exxon. So all of that considered,
right,
and all the fact that the emergency system didn't even have a goddamn battery in it was supposed to. So forget all that, you know.
Yeah.
Since then, they've completely covered it up. What that oil is doing by using dispersants, it's just settling to the bottom.
Yeah.
So it won't look bad from the air. And Louisiana is destroyed. The marshes are going to be destroyed. And I said to Janet about 2 weeks ago, because I was feeling sorry for myself, and so far it hasn't reached us. But I said to her, I said, you know what? And she thought I was being extremely rude. I said, I hope it catches the Gulf Current, goes all the way around Florida, destroys the Keys, destroys Miami, and destroys the whole goddamn East Coast. Because unless it doesn't, everyone on the earth that doesn't live here will forget about it.
Right. And you're right. You're right. It, nobody really...
Every time there's a disaster, it makes the news for about 3-4 weeks, like Hurricane Katrina. And then if you live on the East Coast, it's old news. If you're going to happen, if you're going to awake this country to this potential, then make it big.
No, right? you're absolutely right. It's a harsh way of putting it, Sonny, but if the fact of the matter is that, you know, if it's not high profile enough, nobody's going to care. And it's just a high profile or not, it's just their way. I think we're past the point of no return for many of the problems that this Gulf oil spill is going to cause. And thanks for dropping by, everybody. Nice, positive conversation here.
Well, you know something.
How about that George Gump? Let's talk about George Gump for a minute. No.
Oh, George Gump.
No, no.
He was on my very first show on Grand Rapids.
You know, it's funny. This will also segue back into the technology thing. I've managed to, over the last 10 years, teach a number of courses at the Connecticut School of Broadcasting, the now defunct Connecticut School of Broadcasting. But when we would get into, again, I think that's part of why I felt very lucky to work in the era that I did. I got to see how analog machines work, and now I do digital audio editing, and now I can tell the students what the difference is between the two. And I even pull in the old machines and the razor blades and show them what we used to do, because that makes digital editing make more sense.
So, right. you know, to one example was when you did George Gump, and this is going to be for all our technical, geeky friends out there. The general public's not going to really understand what we're talking about. You would take a piece of scotch tape or editing tape, I believe, and wrap it around the capstan roller of a tape deck to get the speed picked up because we didn't have vary speed on the machines back there. And that's how George Gump was created. Am I getting that right?
Yeah, we would you couldn't speed it from 7.5 to 15, which were the two speeds.
Right.
Because when if you did that, you just sound like the chipmunk.
Right, and you're doubling it, basically. So.
Right. I wanted him to have personality, but I didn't want him to sound like me.
Right.
And so, you're right, we didn't have the option at the time, so at least at the shitholes I worked at. So we would record it normally, and before I played it back, I'd have to get approximately a 7-inch piece of scotch tape and carefully turn the thing off because it was spinning real fast and roll that on there, and that would make the capstan bigger around, a bigger circumference made the tape go through faster.
7-inch piece of tape. So by trial and error, you came up with the proper length of tape that you needed to get his exact speed.
Right, and if you didn't wind it on right and say it folded or got a wrinkle in it, George sounded like he was underwater. He was like, I don't know how to.
That's great.
But you know what? That I tell you, that was because of the equipment at WSHE was rather chintzy. When I was working at my very first job in Grand Rapids, which was years before that, the engineers actually took a recording cart deck, and they took the capstan that sticks up, the same thing, the capstan sticks up and the tape is pinched between the cart and the capstan to pull
right.
the tape around. They took that apart and milled down the capstan.
Oh, I love it. I know what you're telling me. So they built a George Gump machine. That's great.
Right. And they had it so that one record unit, I stick a cart in there, record something, then take it out and play it, and anything else, it would be George.
Oh, that's fantastic. Ah, see? And now it would be...
The tape was from just working at a cheap ass place.
And now George would be merely a plug-in in an audio program now. It would be so simple to do it.
Oh, yeah. Well, the beautiful part about George was, and again, for the technically minded people listening, was that when I would record him during a record, and some of those conversations lasted a minute, and they would go, "All right, Foxo, what's up?" And I go, "Well, nothing. What's going on?" "Well, yeah, I just came by," and I would imagine this conversation in my mind
right.
and record George, rewind it, and do it live.
Right.
We never took the time to play it into another deck, so in case I screwed up, we did it live every single time.
And knew that the space you were leaving when you were recording him was going to be actually shorter when it was played back live, so you had to work around that.
Right, but I'd crutch by going, "Well, why'd you come by? What's the point?" Or I'd mumble. I'd do some mumbling, so when he started talking, it was over me.
Right.
But the funniest moments were I would forget what the next line was. So I would be going, "What'd you come by for? What do you mean you don't owe me money?"
That's just great.
And Ron would just fall on the floor.
And it would just break up the rest of the bit, and you would just fumble your way through it. Those were the funniest moments. Those were great.
Oh, yeah. It was at your expense, but so what, you know?
Right.
I hate announcers that try to be cool. All the years we were at Y100 and at SHE, as you know, I would not only have partners like Ron and yourself and Skip, but everybody I met, my traffic guy, Mark Lipoff, Captain Y, his father came by to see him one day, and he is a very, very Jewish-sounding. I mean, almost, beyond kosher.
Right.
Like, Sonny, my friend, how you doing? You
right.
know, it's like, so I said, "Hey, wait a minute." So I got him to record. The first thing I got him to record was these liners go, "Sonny, let's jam." You know, it's like things you would never hear someone like that say. And then Mr. Microphone was a fellow I met. So the point I'm trying to make is everybody that we met, we made stars, and I was never worried about being the funny guy on the air or the star of the show. And that always bothered me about some announcers. You know, they always wanted the bigger laugh. They always wanted the punchline. Which to me, the more interesting people I run into, the more people would be on the air.
No, you would just basically establish the groundwork for the show and be the central character, but everybody around you was just feeding off of that, and then just... it was like a domino effect. Everyone would just go ahead and have their own funny thing happen, and you just sit there.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, hearing your laughter, or I think it's what a lot of hosts don't realize is that their reaction. Howard Stern's a perfect example. When he'll interview somebody and his reaction to something, just hearing him laugh at something else somebody else is doing is infectious. And it's not necessarily what you're doing. It's how you're reacting that is just as infectious as anything else, you know?
Well, my two heroes that I really, unconsciously or otherwise, influenced me, that's how old I am. The first one was Steve Allen. Steve Allen did the Tonight Show before Jack Parr.
Of course.
And he had Don Knotts, and he had Tom Post and all these guys in the street skits. And Steve Allen, quite obviously, turned the show over to all these extremely talented people.
Right.
He was not interested in being the punchline guy. And to this day, in the same vein, is David Letterman. I've always admired Dave because he plays the everyday guy. I'll be the first one to go on here and go, What's the name of that rubber thing that goes between your groceries? I'll be the dumbass any day if it's the truth.
I mean, talk about self-deprecating, and which is such a great trait in people. I mean, David does it best, and that's what endears his people there and opens them up even more. You know?
Yeah, I mean, don't be afraid to ask a dumb question like you don't know what you're talking about, because most of the people listening don't know either.
Right.
You know, and they can relate to you. And so consequently, another example is Athlete's Foot on Y100. He was on with, what's his name that left that I replaced? Tanner.
Oh, Tanner, right, okay.
Bill Tanner. Footy used to come on twice a morning for 5 minutes doing sports. And he was such a give-a-shit, beer-drinker, tell-it-like-it-is guy, he became on all the time.
Right.
Because I just couldn't wait to hear what he had to say next.
Exactly. What's going to happen here? No, I know exactly what you mean. Sonny, I can't tell you how great this is to have you on. We could go on for hours. I've promised everybody a 30-minute show. This one's turned into, we're going on 53 now. So, I mean, and it could go for two. Hopefully we can do this again in the future, because I think we could do an entirely different show about music alone. Because you and I think that's the thing that we have holding us together more than anything is our mutual admiration of music and the things we've been through musically together. So that's a whole nother show. So
I was going to say the next time around I did start out on the road in a band, and every city I went to and every radio market, every radio station I was at, I got involved with a local group and produced them, and including you and your brother.
Yes, you did, and that is how we met, and those are other great stories that I think we should share at some time. So, you know, when things settle down for you again later this summer, and hopefully we'll do this again.
Well, you can tell I like to talk, and I appreciate your patience.
Well, you know what? One of my fears coming into doing this show was, you know, and I did a couple of trial runs to listen to myself, and, you know, although I consider interviewing to be a forte of mine over the years, it's also something I pay close attention to with other people, my heroes. And one of my fears was talking more than the guest. And that's one thing I didn't have to worry about today.
No, you won't either. I know, it's the same way with me. Gilbert Godfrey could come on and he'll either rattle off at the mouth or be weird. You never know. Or on the other hand, you can say something to Bob Marley and he will go off for 5 minutes, you know.
Well, that's true. And also I have to deal with the fact that I am going to deal with normal, everyday people that aren't necessarily celebrities and haven't been on the air and haven't done television or radio. So I will have to walk them through certain segments of shows. And I know that's something I'm going to have to deal with. But you know what I'm talking about. Even Bob Costas, one of the most famous personalities ever, the guy will do an interview and basically answer the question for the person he's asking the question to. And leave only, yeah, Bob, that's correct. That's a possible answer from them, you know? So that's.
Well, yeah, that's a little like I was saying earlier, when you're interviewing somebody, you want to come off as the expert. You shouldn't do that.
No.
You should be the person interested in what they do and they're interested in. And if they sense that, they'll gladly go off on a tangent and talk about it. You know?
Right.
But I am very, very excited for you. I hope this works out. I hope it becomes extremely popular and you make some money.
Thanks. Well, if you'll post a link or two for me somewhere so people can hear it, that would help, you know, because, again, it's all about grassroots these days. It's amazing how much we've come back to the grassroots elements and, you know... it's going to require help and networking from other people. So any promotion you can help me with would be greatly appreciated, buddy.
You can count on it.
Sonny Fox, part of the first Bill Murphy show ever. It is going to be date stamped June 1st, 2010. More guests from my radio past and musical past over the next week or so. We're going to let Sonny go, and we'll wrap up this show with a little final segment in just a couple minutes. It's the Bill Murphy Show at BillMurphyShow.com.
Log on each weekday for another edition of the Bill Murphy Show at BillMurphyShow.com. If you'd like to be a guest, send an email to murph@BillMurphyShow.com. That's MURPH@BillMurphyShow.com. 8 Murphonics Media Production.
Okay, normally that would be the sound of the close of the show. I just wanted to jump back on here at the end and thank Sonny Fox once again. I also want to thank my good friend Scott Chapin for doing the intros and outros, the bookends of this show. It was awfully, awfully kind of him. Pulling out all the stops and getting in touch with anybody we possibly can to be on the show. If you are interested in being a guest, drop me an email at murph@BillMurphyShow.com. It doesn't matter what you do. Everybody has an interesting story, and we will get it out of you. Also, during this segment of the show, we will be reading your feedback, your emails, so feel free to leave comments at murph@BillMurphyShow.com. Let us know what you think about the show, ask questions, and if you want to hear your comments or questions read on the air during this portion of the show, the tail end of it, we'll be happy to do that. MURPH@BillMurphyShow.com. Thanks for checking out the first show today. We appreciate the support, and I hope that we did a good enough job today to get you back tomorrow or the next day. Weekdays, anytime you like, on the daily podcast at BillMurphyShow.com. See you back here tomorrow.